Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. And I've got a little bit of a frog in my throat or something there going on, Dave. But it is Season 6, Episode 73, and it's Broncos Week. And we'll have Troy Rank of the Denver Post with us later today. And, in fact, we did the interview yesterday, and Troy was fantastic. So that'll be coming up at the end. Dave? We had the Tomlin presser. We got injury updates. We got a fair bit going on. We didn't even get through everything with that Bengals game. Why don't we start with the injury news? And again, we'll give our thoughts on who is going to play and who is not going to play. I guess the surprising news a little bit was that it sounds like D'Angelo Williams is no go.
Yeah, and first, I'd like to apologize. In addition to being a hack blogger, I'm also a hack podcaster. And for those of you that got that little Easter egg that I left you in the beginning of the last podcast, I hope you enjoyed it. I think I've edited that out already. Just having a little bit of good fun with David and his voice as of late there. But yeah, happy Wednesday to you, David. And Tomlin did address the media as he usually does on Tuesday. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger revealed earlier in the day on his radio show that in addition to having kind of a sprain, he has some torn ligaments in that throwing shoulder of his. Tomlin made it sound like he's questionable right now. Ben talked to the media Wednesday morning, didn't rule out the possibility of getting, a pain shot or something before the game Sunday against the Broncos. Obviously, if he's not able to throw the football, down the field 20 or 30 yards, he knows he'd be doing his team an injustice. So that's something to watch. Probably going to be limited most of the week here. He talked about possibly only, getting some handoffs done and getting some mental reps on Wednesday. So when the injury report comes out today, expect him to be listed on it with that shoulder and being limited. And we'll see how the rest of the week goes with him. As you mentioned, D'Angelo Williams, he saw a foot specialist reportedly on Monday in North Carolina. It's back in a walking boot. Mike Tomlin said on Tuesday he's on the outside looking in, so I will be absolutely shocked if he plays Sunday against the Broncos. Antonio Brown, aside from the fact that Bob Holtzman from ESPN saying not looking good for him to play.
Which is worthless.
Yeah, he's still in the concussion protocol as of Tuesday when Tomlin spoke to the media. Still, Ed Bouchette, Jerry Dulac from the Post-Gazette expect AB to be fine by Sunday. I do as well. I'll be shocked if he doesn't play. Let's see who else we got there. We got Will Johnson, Vince Williams, both with hamstrings they're trying to fight back from, and Robert Golden with a shoulder. And I think that's it as far as the infirmary report goes.
And so, we'll see what happens. Look, as we said Monday, I think we're still on the same page. We expect Ben to at least give it a shot to start the game and see how things go. I don't know what the right answer is. Is 70% of Ben better than 100% of Landry Jones, or 60% of Ben, or 80% of Ben? That's something that they're going to have to decide. That's really what the issue is, and then what his pain tolerance level is. But as you rightly said, he'll get a shot and probably he'll be able to handle the pain. And further injury is not really apparently the issue with this type of injury. So, as I said, I expect Antonio Brown to play. I don't expect D'Angelo Williams to play. And I don't expect Will Johnson to play. And I have no idea about Vince Williams or Robert Golden. We'll see where those things go. Dave, a couple things. Let's just kind of finish up with the Cincinnati game, because some things have happened since we talked. And as we suggested, I thought it would be an unprecedented suspension for Vontaze Perfect. I had forgotten that Ndamukong Suh got a 5-game suspension, so I didn't realize that. I hadn't remembered that. But Perfect gets a 3-game suspension. It's, I think, the second longest for any on-field activity that we've seen in the NFL. I'm all for it. I imagine most Steeler fans are all for it. I think a lot of people think that it's kind of a given these days that suspensions get appealed and then they get kind of cut. I don't think there's a chance in HE double hockey sticks that they cut this thing. I think there's a whole new disciplinary procedure. It's by former players. I know Merton Hanks is one of the guys involved. And look, when you're making judgments on off-field behavior and you kind of give excuses or whatever the thing is in the appeal process, I can see why things might get cut back. I do not at all think that Vontaze Burfict has any chance of having this suspension cut from 3 games to 2.
I think there's a chance that happens. We'll see. First and foremost, I was surprised really it was that long. I think the amount was right. 3 games with him. Sometimes with these things, I guess you have to look at his entire body of work since he's been in the league, and he's got, he definitely has the history there. But I was a bit surprised that it was 3 games. Now, whether or not it sticks, boy, we'll have a lot of time to talk about that, and it'll be interesting to see when the schedule is 2016 schedule is finally announced as well, too, whether or not they stick a Bengals Steelers game up there in those top 3 games, and whether or not Burfict winds up missing one of those. My guess, and it's merely a guess, would be that that won't happen, that the Steelers' first 3 games, you'll probably see one maybe against the Browns or the Ravens in there, but I kind of will be surprised if Steelers-Bengals, the first meeting between the two teams happens within the time that Burfict, sat down for.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into this Joey Porter thing, and I thought we discussed it, but we didn't. And, as I wrote and you posted my article on SteelersDepot.com, I don't have any issue with Joey Porter being on the field. And, Dave, the reason I don't is, should he be on the field? No. Okay, I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with everybody agreeing with that and everybody pointing that out. If in 45 years of watching football, I had heard one person before this weekend bring up the issue of an assistant coach being on the field one time, then I would think, okay, this is something we've dealt with in the past. We should talk about it. I've never heard it in my life. We saw multiple occasions in that game where coaches of both teams were on the field. Ben Roethlisberger on his show said, and this is the best answer I heard of all, that he was going out there potentially to help Antonio Brown off the field. They're all the offensive coaches are involved with the 22 seconds left in the game and trying to make sure they have the right play call, the right personnel. They're on the sideline dealing with the game. Joey Porter's not dealing with it as a linebacker coach. So he went out there to help him off the field. I don't know if that's the right answer. I don't know if Ben just came up with a really good kind of reasoning for it. But this is an absolute non-issue for me.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it either. And look, go back to earlier in the game when Jeremy Hill tried to go after a couple of people. There were a couple of Bengals coaches or people on their staff that came out onto the field to get him.
Is it right?
Right. I mean, is that? What's the difference, right?
They
went after trying to keep Hill back, but when is it okay for a coach to come on the field and when is it not?
Look, the assistant coaches aren't supposed to be on the field. It's fine. It's never been called. So all of a sudden, they want to make a big deal. I have zero issue with it. And the Bengals are trying to find answers for their, their behavior. So,
Did you see my Zapruder film kind of hack up of what happened once Porter got out there and kind of picked it up? They had all those angles there. I pieced all of them together, and it starts right after AB gets up and he's walking off the field. Just prior to that, Burfict and Porter say something to each other, but it doesn't look like either of the two are terse, with their words. Burfict attempts to put his right hand on the back of Antonio Brown's shoulder pad and then kind of over to his neck, and he obviously says something there. One of the Steelers trainers knocks away, you know, knocks away Burfict's arm, which, by the way, when it comes back, it hits
Joe
Porter
in the face. Yeah.
Hits Porter in the side of the head. You can see his headset move. Porter, you know, says something there and is walking away and pivoting back around with it, you know, to be behind the referee in the middle of the field. And then in comes Wallace Gilberry from behind, the Bengals defensive lineman, bumps Porter from behind, and then where I spliced it together there, you see Porter being bumped forward, and then for a split second, Vontaze Burfict actually grabs Joey Porter by the jacket. Joey Porter, you know, once he releases him, Joey Porter backs kind of out and a step or two away from that, you know, one, two, three, four, five, six players that are assembled there. And then in comes Adam Jones. And from the time he was kind of bumped and grabbed and backed away, it doesn't look like Porter says anything there. And then obviously Adam Jones was flagged for kind of going after Porter from that instance. So, you know, it didn't appear. Now, we obviously don't know what Porter said while he was out on the field. And knowing Joey probably had a couple of things to say. But, you know, I'm with you. I'm sure the Steelers would get a warning there. I will be shocked if Porter's fine, David.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with that. They may do it because it looks good. you know, it's like it's finding Mike Munchak. I mean, you're going to find him because he had a 3-second act of what may or may not have been intent or got his hand caught or whatever. It's like you're going to find a guy $15,000 for that, whatever. Most of that stuff to me is about appearances and just trying to make sure that everybody, all the other 31 teams understand that behavior is not acceptable. I don't know. It seems to me like the 15-yard penalty was pretty that's a pretty hefty penalty right there. So whether they get fired or not, I don't as you, I'm sure you don't give a damn either way. So, but I've never once heard about it. It's never been discussed about assistant coaches being on the field. Joey Porter did not do anything visible to incite anything. And if he said, you know, your mama's ugly, and that's what got the Bengals going, then, you know, God bless them. And the Bengals deserve everything they get. So, I mean, there was not, as you know, put together in the film, and as we've talked about, there's not anything close to a physical act that should have resulted in any kind of retaliation. So, the Bengals screwed up. There's just no two ways about it. The Bengals screwed up, and they screwed up big time. There was another thing we didn't talk about. It was the 2-point conversion attempts and what the Steelers did and what the Bengals did. And so let me say this. And I talked about it on my show the other day, and I had some people kind of respond to my thoughts. And basically, let me be very clear about how I view 2-point conversions. Yeah, you only have a certain number of plays that you can use inside the 5-yard line. Whatever. The Steelers do it, and they do it well. They were 8-for-11 in the regular season. My view is they're so good at it, they're so talented offensively, that I would do it basically every time in the first half, and then I would use game situation dictate what I do in the second half. And I didn't love Mike doing it up 15-0. To go to what would be a definite 3-score lead versus kicking the extra point, which would be, I don't know if you call it a 2-score lead or a 3-score lead or a 4-score lead, but the Bengals have to have 4 scoring plays to actually tie. They have to have 2 touchdowns and 2 2-point conversions. So they have to do 4 things to get there. And I thought the better idea would have been to kick the extra point. Do I not sleep at night because they went for 2? No, of course they're good at it. But that was my take on it. And, you know, Dave, I don't know where you were at the time about going for 1 or 2 there.
I had no issue with it because you have to view it in possessions. And if you kick the extra point, it's a 2-possession game. Yes, 4 plays have to – 4 scoring plays have to take place. Obviously 2 touchdowns and 2 2-point conversions, but you have to look at it from a possession standpoint, in my opinion. So, I had no issue. I mean, 5:02 left in the third quarter, your defense, is playing well, pitching a shutout at that point. you know, if you get that 2-point conversion, it becomes a 3-possession game. And how many more possessions were the Bengals going to, you know, possibly get with 5:02 left in the third quarter there? So I had no issue at it, you know, with it at all. Had Tomlin not been so aggressive throughout the year like he had been, you know, maybe I question a little bit more. But I mean, this team has had success going for two throughout the season, and Mike Tomlin at times is viewed as kind of an aggressive coach in that area of the game. So I had no issue.
Yeah, funny.
With it,
so I imagine we have just flummoxed all our listeners being on the opposite side of that equation. You taking that side, and me taking the side I took. How about the Bengals 2-point play? That was a beauty.
I don't understand that at all.
Can you imagine, Dave, if that he had not? So for those who don't remember, they threw it to I think it was Gio, but they basically it was a
Hill because Gio was out of the game.
So they threw it to Hill, and it was basically a lateral. And if you don't remember, the rules have been changed where, you know, if that ball had been on the carpet and the Steelers pick it up, they could have returned it. Can you imagine if they're going for two there at 16-15, and that ball hits the ground and the Steelers return it for two, and they're upset? I mean, can you – that would have been – that would have just been the all-timer of all-timers.
To win 17-16.
On a conversion on the defensively.
Yeah, bad call. And look, now here's something nobody else is talking about too. That touchdown shouldn't have counted.
Oh, you did a great job on some of these videos. I give you tons of credit.
A.J. Green false started. You know, it, plain as day, he flinched on that play. And even after A.J. Green scored, in comes Jeremy
that
Hill.
That might have been even the better video.
Yeah, in comes Jeremy Hill doing the William Gay kind of celebration dance. And no call there. There was no call when all those Bengals ran up into the tunnel following not a score but an interception. Where was that call? You know that they've made it a point to certainly flag William Gay recently on some of these celebrations. How does none of that get called? How does Jeremy Hill not get called for taunting there as well? And you want to talk about you want to talk about something that could really change the game, because look, they're kicking off from you know, a little bit further back, man. Right?
I mean look, the videos. I love the way you phrased it. I mean, karma's a bitch. I mean, Jeremy Hill. For those who haven't seen it, go watch it. It's AJ Green catches that touchdown. William Gay is late or leaves to hit AJ Green and. You know, he doesn't do his job. Mike Mitchell clearly doesn't do his job of getting over there. So Mitchell's kind of up. Mitchell's actually on his knees on about the 3-yard line, and Gay's coming back from the corner of trying to strip the ball from Green when he catches it. And two Bengals run to A.J. Green to celebrate. And then obviously Hill has run 40 yards down the field, and he does, you know, this duck dance right in front of William Gay when he's walking back, you know, onto the playing field. And yeah, karma's a bitch. That's, you know, it was really ridiculous.
Yeah, and talking about that AJ Green play, now that we have the all 22, as I said the other day, it was hard to judge because you can't see in the TV frame, you can't see Mike Mitchell in there. And obviously, I could have put two and two together that, boy, Mitchell would have had to come a long, long way thinking that he was the only safety on that other third of the field there. But I mean, it's obvious now when you look at the all 22 that there's, you know, you got two safeties deep there. And that explains now why William Gay kind of sat down up underneath that play. So, you know, could Gay kind of help probably a little bit better up underneath? You know, maybe, but I mean, his job is that outside, you know, that outside kind of quarter of the field zone responsibility. And when you look, yeah, Mike Mitchell kind of frozen, should have helped out over the top there to break that up. So that's the luxury of that's the bad thing, David. Sometimes when we have these Monday podcasts and trying to break down these games, and especially secondary faults and where they go is we don't have the all 22 to go by. So it was obvious that Mike Mitchell deserves a lot of the blame on that AJ Green touchdown. But hey, that thing should have been 3rd and 12 instead of 3rd and 7 because AJ Green certainly fault started prior to that ball being snapped.
And you know, look, those are the things that I if the Steelers had lost that game, that's not anything I'm going to lose any sleep over. Those are really small things, and officials aren't going to get every call right. And you know, did it impact the play at all? Obviously not. It had no impact on anything. Bengals made the play. Yeah. Okay. So we move on. Man, I was trying to when I was introducing the Tomlin podcast, the Tomlin press conference on my show yesterday afternoon, I was trying to think of the right adverb to use about Mike yesterday. Salty, surly,
snippy,
short. You know, lots of S words.
He wasn't in the mood to talk about that Bengals.
He was
game
not
much.
In the mood to talk about that. Exactly right. He didn't want to have a word about it. And for those who didn't hear it, I started with a topic that Dave and I had discussed, and it relates to the hits. You know, we spent a good amount of time on Monday talking about the hits. And look, we have opinions. They differ. Dave and I differ on these things. We're just going to give it to you the way we see it. And Dave and I can disagree, and you can disagree with either one of us or both of us, as the case may be. But I was asking Mike a question, not about a specific play. I wanted him, as a member of the rules committee, to tell me an answer to a question that, you know, is difficult to define in the NFL. We've seen Mike Pereira, since Dave and I disagreed on Monday to some degree on the Shazier hit, kind of defend his stance. And he's been, I guess, adamant about it. I mean, I haven't heard a bunch of stuff, but I heard the podcast the audio that Dave put on his site about Pereira talking about it. And Mike says to me, you know, a bit of an asinine response of, you know, you can read the rule book just like I can. But if I read the rule book and I look at the rule that I posted in the article that's on Dave's site, it says very clearly you cannot lead with the crown of the helmet outside the tackle box, and Ryan Shazier did. So I don't know. Mike Pereira's defense to it seems to be, well, it's never called. Well, I mean, it's never called is not a defense to what the rule book says. The rule book says you can't do it, and Mike Tomlin didn't want to answer it, Dave. I was very surprised at how short he was with, I mean, he gave a long-winded answer, but, you know, the answer of I could but I won't is really, I thought it was asinine, to be honest.
Yeah, and then to hear Mike Pereira, the more Mike Pereira talked in that interview with Rich Eisen, the more confusing he got. You know, he started off talking about kind of the rule was designed sort of like two Rams going head-to-head. And then he kind of went, you know, a little bit off base from there. So it's really kind of – but, I mean, he's still – Pereira's still, you know, animate that you know, that Shazier shouldn't have been flagged in that instance. And, yeah, it would be nice to know what Tomlin, A, you know, thinks the rule – you know, not asking him whether or not –
Yeah, nothing to do with the play. No play. What is the rule?
Yeah, what is a rule in this situation?
Did I ask the question? Was it unclear when I asked the question what I was asking?
I didn't think so. Of course, I can't sit here and recite it to you either, what you asked. So, you know, I'll have to go back and listen to that portion of the press conference again.
I didn't say, did Ryan Shazier or did Sean Williams or anybody else. I said, what is the rule? Can you explain to us what the rule is? Explain to me.
Yeah, and that's the proper way to do it. And quite honestly, he might not even be 100% sure, or he didn't want to get hung the tongue.
And you know what? That's probably the right answer. That is why put yourself out there on record as saying this is how something goes.
Because Lord knows those bloggers are going to write 4 posts about it. You know, at some point, David, and I don't know when that will be. You need to bring that back up.
I was just thinking as you were talking, and it's probably at St. Vincent next year. But yeah, Mike, what is the rule about leading with the? You know, you're on the rules committee. what is the rule about, you know, tackling, and what do you teach your players?
And you know, I think we all agree there needs to be more clear. So many things happen now, David, on these replays, and I've watched football since I was 4 years old. There are some plays now that happen that I haven't got a clue what the outcome's going to be.
You mean everybody else?
And you got to remember, you know, private time reading material for me is the NFL rule book and the CBA. that's my NFL porn, if you will. The catches and possession and 2 feet down and defenseless receiver and, you know, all of that. They just keep trying to make more rules, and sometimes the clarification for the average fan. And what happens if the average fan can't understand the game?
Well, we're getting close to that, so that's, you know, that's definitely an issue. And I'm sure we're going to see the catch rule change this year to make that easier. They'll go back to something that's much more simplistic: 2 feet down, possession of the ball, you know, take a step, it's a catch. I mean.
Let me ask you this. Should a guy like similar to, I guess, what the NHL does, should Dean Blandino be sitting in New York making every challenge of every ruling? That way one guy
Dean Blandino and five guys should be doing that. Yes. I mean, at least then you'll have a common thread of thought. Whether it's right or wrong, you would assume that if one group of, you know, four or five guys are doing it, having a discussion, it'll be consistent. And the problem that we have is it's not consistent. That's the biggest issue, right?
Right. What does the NCAA do with these potential ejection?
It does not go. I mean, you got, you know, 100 games going on. I do not think it goes to a central location.
Right. Right. You know, but should it?
Well, the NCAA probably can't afford to do it that way.
We know the NFL can.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are 10 games going on at one time. So,
and you know what? Shame on Dan. I know Dean Blandino tries to go on NFL Network every week and kind of explain these questionable calls and do all that. But I mean, this should. And perhaps maybe we will by the end of the week. I haven't kind of searched around to see if he's commented on this. But most definitely, you know, it would be great for the fans and probably the teams too, you know, and the coaches to have explanations of this. And maybe, you know, maybe they do. Maybe every week. By now, for all we know, maybe Mike Tomlin's got sent a video from the league explaining.
You're right. I agree with you 100%. This is why this was called. This was why this was called, and it was incorrect. You know, Shazier's hit should have been called. Wheaton's hit should or should not have been called. You know, and
maybe that's another question for you know. We kind of joked about what does Mike Tomlin do every week during a game. Well, I think a lot of our listeners and fans in general like to know what happens with Mike Tomlin during the week. I mean, is that does he get a package from FedEx or an email or video of certain hits from around the league and clarification of rules? It would be nice to have the team kind of pull back the curtain a little bit more. That stuff's not going to give an opposition a competitive advantage. Right.
I'm with
right,
you. Look,
right.
It's a
so,
good question,
you know,
and I will ask that at some point. I think it's dead on, and if the league's not doing that, they should. They should every week have it, you know, the you know, 10 – most controversial or incorrect calls or whatever they're going to be. And they should send them to the coaching staffs and say, we got this one right. We got this one wrong. Here they are. Do not, and maybe the answer is we're sending this to you. Do not comment on these publicly or you'll be fined. And that's fine too. But just the process.
And from a safety aspect too, right? They keep talking about wanting to make the game safer. So, you know, there's that as well too. So you know, you can talk, write that down in your notes for
next season.
Time you see off season.
All right.
See Tomlin.
So, what else from the press conference other than him just firing? I'm not going to talk about it. I've said I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it. You can ask me. They're all good suggestions. I'm not going to talk about it.
Really, you know, the praise for Todman and Toussaint, I thought was justified.
TNT Dynamite.
That's taken over now. Will I get royalties from that?
I guarantee you were the first person to say it. I don't know where D'Angelo heard it. Maybe somebody else had a similar idea. But I think you threw it out on that podcast last week on Wednesday. I mean, nobody else. You were first. I'll give you – that's better than all the Boswell's going to kick a late field goal. This is going to happen. That was better.
No, it's not. all right, send the royalty checks. You know, every time somebody says that, I earn 15 cents or something like that. But, yeah, I found – you know, look, no doubt, both those guys played well in that game. Tomlin gave Shazier some props as well, too, Dupree, Jarvis Jones as well. What else
Tomlin
did he really say?
And basically went in the press conference and just repeated it.
I don't know. There's some people that accuse that.
By the way, speaking of patting yourselves on the back, since we've been patting you for two podcasts now, how about me saying the Bengals like they might melt down? The Bengals are going to melt down here. Bang. Tweeted that twice.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Excellent call. Pat on the kudos for you for sure. And they did just that. I mean, let's not fool ourselves. They gave the Steelers that game on a silver platter, not only with a Jeremy Hill turnover, which Shazier earned. That was a heck of a rip out by Shazier, but, just, you know, we're beating a dead horse on the end of that game now, but, they definitely didn't have the composure to win that thing out. And now they're sitting at home and Pac-Man Jones is talking about Antonio Brown winning a Grammy which I thought a Grammy was for a musical award, but look, back to kind of a serious notion here with this team heading into Denver now. Before we get to Troy Rink from the Denver Post to talk a little bit more about the upcoming game, we'll break this thing down in detail a little bit more on Friday to give us something to talk about here. After looking at some more film. But, I mean, what's kind of your early thoughts on this game?
I'm nervous. I mean, look, I didn't feel great, and I know you didn't either going into the Cincinnati game. I really feel like the Steelers having – Dave, one of the things – I don't know if we mentioned this on Monday, but one of the things is Ben has not played well the last 3 weeks. He hasn't played terribly in the last two games. He was terrible against the Ravens, but he hasn't played great. And I go back to the fact that what's the common denominator – of the last three games. It's they've played three division opponents. These guys have seen Ben for years. They know what's coming. They know what he likes to do. They know tendencies. They scheme against the Steelers. They get to watch it all the time. And I feel like the familiarity of the other teams has hurt Ben in particular in the last three games. And so I'm nervous because the Broncos saw this. And you'll hear some great stuff from Troy in this interview that we did yesterday talking about the Bengals and the Broncos and why they felt like things got out of hand for him. Chris Harris took full responsibility. He gave Antonio Brown full credit. He's looking forward to the matchup again. They feel like they have to tackle better. Well, good luck tackling Antonio Brown in space. But that's what concerns me is that we've seen a pattern here over the last 3 weeks that teams that get to see Ben scheme against the Steelers' plans. And I think Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin have to come up with a game plan that's a little bit different and a little more creative. And I still go back to the shallow crosses with Antonio getting him the ball. They got him on the blitz. They got him the ball. He went 60 yards. It was the right call at the right time. But I just feel like they have to find a way to get him the ball in space and do a better job of it if they're going to win this game. And obviously Ben has to be healthy.
I fear this game, even if the injury report on the Steelers side of the ball was blank. I would still fear this upcoming game. Now you have a quarterback that we're not even sure is going to be able to throw the football more than 15 yards down the field with any velocity whatsoever. Hopefully he can. Now, obviously in these last three games, Teams have, and really the Broncos game on top of it, teams are trying to play too high safeties and trying to limit the down the field shots and saying, look, Ben, take what you want underneath. We're going to bet that you'll force a throw. We're going to bet that you can't run the football, and that's how we're going to beat you, because we're not going to let you get us 40, 50 chunk yards at a time. So when you talk about Ben not going to be 100% in this game, you're talking about not having your best running back, even though TNT did a great job against the Bengals. Malik, they're going to face another tough test, and Malik Jackson and these other guys up front. You know, I spend the last 3 years, I think, clowning on Alex Smith and the type of football that the Chiefs play. But to be quite honest with you, I am drilling that Kansas City Chiefs versus Broncos tape the rest of this week, and kind of seeing what they've done with a quarterback that doesn't necessarily throw the football well, and working underneath. And to make and to go even on top of that, David, being that's how this is a Broncos defense is going to play a lot of man against you as well too. I would look at some of that Patriots tape from week one against the Steelers, from their offense, and running a lot of those rubs. Now, we don't see this on a weekly basis from the Steelers, so it's not, you know, something that they probably have in their playbook a lot. But I think you really have to make a concerted effort to kind of rub off some of these defenders in certain instances, for sure. You obviously you got to play keep away from this game from Peyton Manning, because, look, I mean, the Steelers' defense has been good, but nobody deciphers a defense like Peyton Manning does. So that's going to present some obstacles for you as well, too. This defense, we talked about, I said at the end of the, I think at the last podcast, boy, you know, at certain points during a playoff run, you have to have your defense maybe bail you out of a game or two. Well, the Steelers got that, I thought, last week against the Bengals, and I think I said something to the notion to be lucky to get that again. You know, Keith Butler talks about that magic number of 17 and holding opponents to 17 points. And if the Steelers are unable to keep the Broncos to 17 or less points in this game, I just don't see how the Steelers can win this. I really don't.
I'll give it to 20, but going there, I mean, look,
how do you see him score? I mean, look, and take the last game out of it, because, you know, remember, and Troy will remind us of this in the interview too, that they didn't have, you know, they were missing some components on the back end of that defense last time.
TJ Ward didn't play, big deal. That's a huge deal.
Yeah, and they were missing another safety in that game as well too. You know, so that's huge, and that's something that needs to be discussed. And Troy reminds us of that in the interview as well too. So, look, yeah, Antonio Brown had really schooled Chris Harris Jr. And but that guy, look, it's not like he had. This isn't like Antonio Brown has a history like he does against Joe Hayden of owning him really on a game to game basis. That was one time. Chris Harris is a great corner. If you think that you're going to drill Chris Harris like that again, you probably got another thing coming. And if AB is able to do that, Ben's able to get the ball. But you want to talk about AB? I don't. You know, AB after the season, I don't attend a single workout. You know, because, I mean, it's already proof that he's the best in the league. But, you know, I'm rambling here, but I just, if you don't hold the Broncos to 17 or less points, you know, tell me how this team is going to score 20 points against this Broncos
team.
Well,
they've done it. So that's the obvious answer, is they've done it once. So can they do it again? An extraordinary second half when they needed it, after a terrible first half by the defense and a great second half by the defense. We'll see if the defense can put together four full quarters, because that's something they haven't really done often this year. They've played well at times. They've been opportunistic at times. We'll see if they can put both of them together. Maybe they get some turnovers. Maybe Peyton Manning doesn't light it up, doesn't have the arm strength. But this is going to be a really interesting game. But very simply,
You got to knock down Peyton Manning several times in this game too,
and get pressure up the middle, fire X, you know, come up the middle with the fire X blitzes. Very simply, Vegas doesn't make, you know, divisional round games, 7-point games all that often. They're concerned about the Steelers' health primarily, and that, you know, they're saying something about the Broncos. I mean, for sure. because if this game were in Pittsburgh right now, with the injury report the way it is, I'm not sure the Steelers. I don't think the Steelers would be favored. I mean, it would be a
probably no, absolutely not.
You know,
absolutely.
2 points to the 2 points to the Broncos, right? Yeah, you
Three.
Think they'd give them a whole field goal? I think it. Two.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's where the money would go.
Well, interesting stuff. All right, we got Troy Rank coming up from the Denver Post. Really great insights again on where the Broncos are, Peyton Manning situation, and what they learned from the last. What they learned from the last game. That's coming up now. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast, and every Wednesday, as we like to do. We get a beat writer who's covering the opposing team. And in December, late December, the Steelers played the Broncos. And we had the pleasure of having Troy Rank on with this. Troy, of course, a beat writer who covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. We got a great reaction to that show. Troy did a great job, and he's been kind enough to join us again. Troy, as always, thanks for being with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Look forward to this.
Troy, we're doing this on Tuesday because of conflicts in schedule. Appreciate you taking the time here. Let's get right to kind of the injury status for the Broncos. For the Steelers, it sounds like D'Angelo Williams won't go. Antonio Brown's in the concussion protocol. Our guess is Ben probably does play in this game, but maybe limited in terms of what he can do. What's the status for the Broncos?
Well, they're healthier than they've been probably any time during this season, frankly. The only big issue they have is a hamstring injury for their safety. Darian Stewart, he missed the Steelers game last time. Both their safeties did, which obviously compromised them. Darian Stewart was expecting to practice on Wednesday, but he is a concern. DeMarcus Ware has a left knee injury. He's going to play, but will he be compromised? Other than that, the Broncos are healthy. I mean, the Steelers are almost kind of in a similar situation to what Denver was when they headed to Pittsburgh, where you had key guys out. So Denver and Peyton Manning, you could argue, is as healthy as he's been since the Packers game in early November. And so with his left foot, again, that could change because anything could make that plantar fascia tear or be painful. But he's in a better spot than he certainly was 6 weeks ago.
Troy, that's obviously all the talk is about Peyton Manning. And in the San Diego game, Peyton comes in for Brock Osweiler. There are five turnovers. You can make an argument that Brock was really not responsible for most of them. In terms of the decision-making, was Gary Kubiak just looking for an opportunity to get Peyton in there? Do you think if Brock and the offense had done more in the first half that he would have played the whole game and they would have turned to Peyton here? How did that all play out?
Yeah, it's a great question. If they had won impressively and, you know, Emmanuel Sanders doesn't fumble and they go up 14-3 and they cruise to a 28-10 victory, I believe Osweiler is the starter. But, again, there's a lot of hypotheticals here because Osweiler hurt his knee. He sprained his right knee in the Chargers game. He's not moving around great. So that could have opened an avenue, even if he had played well, for Manning to return. But they treated the Chargers game as a playoff game. They were, I think, kind of looking for a window to see if they could get Manning some snaps. They didn't think it would come in that situation. But once he played well, showed he was healthy, and they won, Kubiak felt comfortable sticking with him. And, you know, in fairness to Kubiak, throughout the process for 7 weeks, he basically said, while leaving wiggle room, that if Manning is healthy, he could return. And they didn't believe he was fully healthy against the Chargers, but then they see it for their own eyes, and then that convinced them. He has more experience. That's part of it. And also, again, Brock Osweiler hurt his right knee. So I think that if there was a tiebreaker, that would have probably been it.
Right.
Troy, with Manning back healthy, again, there's probably still questions about the arm strength and the ability to throw the deep ball with accuracy instead of, you know, kind of fluttering him out there. However, you know, he's so good with identifying blitzes and coverages. And, you know, the Steelers defense obviously has questions, even though they've played well recently. My question really is, you know, what's the best way to attack Manning in this game? Is it to dare him, you know, to try to beat you over the top and kind of stack that box with eight guys, regardless of the situation, or do you kind of lay back a little bit?
Well, the formula against Peyton all season has been 7-8 guys near the line of scrimmage, take away the underneath routes, dare him to go long to the hashes and see if he can make that pass. And on games where they, you know, he's played well, he's made that throw. On games he's thrown picks, been intercepted, looked poor, he hasn't been able to make that pass. really for them, the issue is can they run the ball? When they've shown balance, Manning is much more effective. He cannot be Peyton Manning of 2013, 2012, where he's throwing 50 times a game. That's not this Peyton Manning. If they show balance like they did against the Steelers in the first half of their previous matchup, they're a pretty good offense. When they don't show balance, the line gets exposed because their pass protection isn't very good, and Manning's not able to make plays outside the pocket. He's not going to color outside the line. So if you pressure him up the middle and the ball gets tipped or floats, it's a pick. And I do believe, though, the six-week absence for Manning, you know, it was humbling. He came back as a healthy backup for the first time since his freshman year at Tennessee, where he backed up Todd Helton and Jerry Colquitt. It humbled him, I believe, to realize he doesn't have to carry this team anymore. If they're going to win, and it sounds disrespectful, but they need him to manage the game and not turn the ball over. If he buys into that, he can be successful. If he tries to make plays downfield and do things his body won't let him, we've seen what that results in, which is interceptions.
It's hard to say that a player like Demaryius Thomas catching 105 balls for 1,300 yards and six touchdowns is a down year. But, I mean, he did have time struggles at times, I think, with some drops and all. Has he kind of identified and moved past, you know, some of those, you know, mid-season problems that he had?
Yeah, and they need him. He played well against the Chargers. They need him to play at an elite level. He didn't have a terrible year, obviously, you read off the statistics. But he, you know, he's paid huge money, 40-some guaranteed million dollars. He was paid to be an elite guy, a leader, you know, put a team on your back for a few series if they need to. He hasn't been able to do that consistently. I think part of it is he's trying to make the big play when it's not there. And he got back to basics after the drops. I mean, that's what's really sabotaged him at times. He got back to basics of, you know, catch the ball with your eyes, see it in, make the routine play over and over, and then you look up and you have a great game. Too often he'd drop one and then still like, oh, the next pass, I got to take 70 yards, and then he'd drop another one, and now it's problematic because their offense just doesn't have much margin for error. If he dropped passes last year, they were going to come back to him and score two or three more touchdowns. This offense doesn't have that margin for error.
Talking with Troy Rank, who covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. Follow him on Twitter at Troy Rank, R-E-N-C-K. Troy, what was the reaction from the Broncos defenders to kind of basically the way Ben Roethlisberger in the passing game chewed him up? I mean, I realized the two starting safeties weren't there, and that's a big deal. And we'll see if they're both back for this one. Obviously, we expect Ward back. Harris hadn't given up a touchdown pass in forever, and you know, they've got Bradley Roby is a quality kind of third corner, nickel guy to come in there to leave. What did those guys have to say about?
Well, Harris took blame. He said the loss was on him. He hadn't given up a touchdown since November of 2013 to Julian Edelman, and he gives up two in one game. He admittedly let an interference call, a questionable interference call, kind of get in his head, and then he got off his game. He makes no excuses. He gives the credit to Brown. Brown played better than him that day. He's looking forward to the matchup, obviously, for a guy who's only given up two touchdowns in, you know, 2.5 years. He's embracing the rematch. The Broncos, defensively, they didn't feel like they got shredded by Big Ben because it took 55 passes to get 380 yards. So
right.
The yards per attempt weren't great. Where they really saw issues with their defense is tackling yards after the catch. If you go back and look at that film, that was by far their worst tackling day of the year. And part of that is the Steelers. I mean, let's be honest. They create some of that, especially Brown, slippery. But they didn't see it and go, oh, man, we were overmatched. They felt like the issue was, A, Harris had a bad day, admittedly. And secondly, they just didn't tackle well once the guys caught the ball. And that's something, obviously, they placed extra emphasis on this week is, hey, you're going to give up passes, you know, let's see what, you know, maybe not as much if Ben's compromised with his shoulder, but you're going to give up yards to Roethlisberger. It's the key is keeping it to 6 yards, 5 yards, not let six become 15.
Yeah, and it's what's really interesting here for us is, as we've been talking over the past couple of weeks, Ben hasn't played well the last 3 weeks. And the big question is it because the last 3 weeks he's seen divisional opponents who see him all the time? You know, these coaches have coached against him. Harbaugh and Lewis have coached against him forever. And he had a bad game in Baltimore. He was erratic in Cleveland. And, you know, you saw the playoff game. I would say he was solid, certainly not spectacular, until coming back in the last drive and getting help from the Bengals. Is that something that the Bengals coaching staff you think will take away from the first game and game plan and follow maybe the what they saw the Ravens and the Bengals do to kind of shut down the Steelers' deep passing game, or they're gonna the Broncos are gonna do what they're gonna do?
Yeah, the Broncos defense this year really plays. Their identity is man coverage. We're gonna get after you. I do think they'll disguise more zone blitzes this time around. I thought they were way too man heavy last time, only because they were without their safety. I mean, you were asking guys who had been literally street free agents 2 weeks ago trying to play man at times. I just think that was a little too ambitious. But they are who they are. They're not going to be a defense that's looking to trick you. They're going to come after you. They're going to get after the passer. What I do see differently with Ben compromised is how they defend, you know, maybe they're going to challenge him almost like Manning gets challenged. We're going to take away some of the underneath stuff and see how can Ben go deep. I mean, is that realistic for him? And I do think they're going to try to get after him a little more, you know, a couple more blitzes to see, okay, physically, where is he at? Whereas, you know, in the first game, they pretty much played straight up a lot of the time. I think you're going to see a more aggressive Bronco defense, and they're going to, you know, this is the NFL. It's there's no sympathy in this sport, but they're going to try to see where Roethlisberger's health is, both with his arm and can he take a hit, you know? That's what I do think you'll see more of than you saw last game, where they were kind of content to rush with their normal guys and play man. I think you're going to see a little more zone, and you're going to see them get after the passer through blitzes a little more.
My question that I had written down that I wanted to kind of tag on there, and your answer will probably be sort of similar, but being as how a lot of these defenses over the last several weeks of the season have been playing a lot of two-man deep safeties, and that kind of is the MO for the Broncos as well too, and with their safeties back this week with Ben banged up, and obviously he hasn't been great with the deep ball as of late, is there could you see them actually playing some one-man you know, some cover one and try to cheat a safety up a few steps in that box in order to help not only with the run but the underneath passing?
Well, they'll do that sometimes with Ward. I mean, Ward can stop the run. T.J. Ward plays almost – you guys are familiar with him, certainly from his days with the Browns, but he's a pseudo quasi-linebacker at times in the run game. So they will do some of that. It just – I'm hesitant to say a lot or any because I don't know the health of Darian Stewart. And if Stewart's not healthy – you've got to adjust to that because when they've bitten off more than they can chew with Josh Bush and Shiloh Kao, it ends up haunting them, you know? And so I think you got to be careful. It's just controlled aggression. Pick your spot because there's no reason to give up a huge play to Brown or Bryan on the outside and go, oh, geez, Shiloh Kao was on. I mean, you can't put the game in the hands of a guy who's been on the team for a month. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. So, you know, and that's not fair to him. I mean, that's not fair to the player. So I think they're gonna be, again, more aggressive in how they challenge Ben. And I felt like they gave too big of a cushion at times during that game. Again, with Brown, it's different. It takes him out of the equation. He's such a unique player. But even other players, a little bit more cushion than we had seen with Broncos corners. With Ben compromised, I can't imagine that they're going to allow that. I can see them being much more aggressive at point of attack in the line of scrimmage.
You can't talk about the Broncos defense this year without talking about Malik Jackson, you know, up front on that line. How would you kind of summarize his season and what's led to him really becoming, you know, one of the better 3-4 defensive ends, I guess, in the league right now?
He's disruptive. He's Michael Bennett-like. He doesn't have Bennett's quickness necessarily, but he's similar. When you look up at the end of the day, similar stat line. He deflects passes. He lives in the backfield. He can stop the run. He's sturdy enough to stop the run. He's got, I think, 6.5, 7 sacks. But it's not just sacks with him. It's pressure. He gets after the passer, and he's got a nasty streak, too. I mean, Malik's problem is he plays on the edge, and sometimes he goes over it and gets stupid penalties. But the defense feeds off this kind of personality of taking it right to the limit, and Malik is a poster child for that. That he plays aggressive, he plays nasty, he's out there to, you know, win and take names, and they like that about him. And he has, over the second half of the season, eliminated some of the silly stuff. But you got to hope again, because the Broncos they're furious with Cody Wallace, and you got to be careful not to use this game to settle scores, because when the Broncos defense has compromised itself, it's been with personal fouls. And they finally healed that wound over the last 5-6 weeks But, you know, the playoffs aren't the game to start settling scores with a guy.
Yeah, tell the Bengals, right? Settling scores.
yeah, selfish football in the playoffs. You see what happens. I mean, the guy, but Burfict, I mean, Burfict's been doing that since his freshman year at ASU, so that did not surprise me. I was surprised that Marvin Lewis didn't put him on the sideline for a couple series and say, listen, calm down. You're killing us. You know, I mean, but again, there's a reason the Bengals haven't won a playoff game since 1991.
Yeah, absolutely. Just wrapping things up here, Troy. Steelers are going to be playing in Denver this time, obviously. Altitude, you know, for opposing teams, it's something they think about. How's it going to affect the kicking game? I mean, I assume the Steelers aren't going to see a kick to return. I assume Brandon McManus just kicks it in the stands every time. Is that the case?
Yeah, the kickoff return is really a non-issue here for both teams, frankly. But, yeah, McManus, he does lead the league, or he did until the last week of the season with touchbacks. And your kicker, your guy's going to have more range. I mean, 55-yard and in is realistic at altitude. A 55-yarder is equivalent to about 50 anywhere else. So, and the weather's supposed to be decent. You know, I think mid-40s. It's been cold as heck here, but it's supposed to be in the 40s. So I think the kicking game, it'll play fair. The kickoff return is a non-issue, but, you know, again, both teams' punt returns, we have left something to be desired, but that's where Brown, if he's involved, or Emmanuel Sanders, the former teammates, it only takes one with a guy like that that could change the game, like, you know, change the field or change the game.
How aggressive will Gary Kubiak be? We've seen, we saw a little bit on playoff weekend, some guys going for it on fourth down with success, and Marvin Lewis didn't do this in the Steeler game a couple times where I really thought he missed opportunities in fourth down. I'm generally in favor of that type of, you know, aggressive coaching style. How aggressive will Kubiak be? And then let me ask you, in the kicking game, what's realistic for him to do in the run of play, not necessarily at the end of a half, but where will he attempt a field goal? Will he send him out to kick a 57-yarder, you know, in the middle of the second quarter?
Yeah, I think they would. I mean, again, some need to know some of the score issue here, but yeah, 57 for McManus is realistic. They're real good with him before the game, and he's honest with them. You know, they'll go out before the game and say, okay, here's what I got. And some days it has been a little less than that, even at home, but he has got a monster leg, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they would try a 56, 57 yarder. Again, the tricky part with Denver is they love their defense. So they just got to be careful not to compromise it and do things offensively that undermine their defense, which has been clearly their biggest strength this season. But, yeah, Kubiak, he uses an analytics guy, even on game day, to analyze fourth down situations. He's been aggressive but not crazy. He's not going to go for it every time. But, again, part of it is influenced by this defense. They really have a feel for, hey, this other team's doing nothing against the defense, so let's play conservative here. And then there's been times where Kubiak's been all in and knowing that they need a play because they need to sustain a drive. So I think Gary's probably right in the middle. He's not conservative and he's not crazy. He's just probably right in the middle if you ran a metric on going to fourth on fourth down.
Name one final question from me, Troy. Name one player that nobody will really talk about on the Broncos leading up to this game who could have a huge impact and why.
Well, I'd say Owen Daniels or Vernon Davis, one of their tight ends. They come and go in this offense. They were supposed to be a staple, and they really haven't been. Daniels has played really well the last couple of weeks. Vernon Davis, that gator arm drop at Pittsburgh, he has kind of disappeared from the face of the earth. But, again, he has such speed, he can get into a seam, maybe one catch for 35 yards, you're talking about after the game. But I would say if there's one position that, you know, gets overlooked that could be a factor, it would be the tight end position with Daniels, Virgil Green, or Vernon Davis.
Hey, Troy, man, awesome stuff. I know the Steelers and the Broncos aren't scheduled to play next year, so it would have to be the playoffs. But we've really appreciated having you on both times. It's great insights. Thanks so much for your time.
Anytime, guys. Absolute pleasure. Take care.
Okay, Troy Rank of the Denver Post. As they say, you can follow him on Twitter at Troy Rank, R-E-N-C-K. Great info leading up to the week. You know, get the latest on the injury reports, and he's, you know, obviously writing his articles for the Post leading into this, and get his insights going throughout the rest of the week. We'll come back and we'll wrap things up for our Wednesday Terrible Podcast. Okay, Dave, great stuff again from Troy Rank. Really good insights on what's going on, and really interesting to hear him talk about kind of Chris Harris's reaction to what happened in the first game and what they thought went wrong.
Absolutely. Boy, we have had some great beat writers on this podcast this year once again, and we thank all of them. Hopefully we're doing it again next Wednesday here with the Steelers in the AFC championship game there. Keep your fingers crossed there. But thanks a lot for Troy for joining us. And make sure if you're not following him on Twitter, get on there to get some of the updates from the Broncos. Reach out to him as well, too, and thank him for coming on the show. Additionally, I know those guys like that, and it kind of helps us get them back on the show again when that time comes. David, a few other donations I want to get to have come in. Make sure to read these things off before we get out of here. Robert Canterman, Robert's a long time
high school classmate of mine.
Right, and a longtime contributor to the show. Rob Walco, that's another name I've seen in the donation category as well, too. David Safara, looks like. Greg Galbraith, Christopher Moore, Justin Kirkwood, Barrett Franklin, Joseph Zellner. Some of these I think I'm duplicating. Chris Milanovic, thank you for your donations. Danielle Volk, I know I read that name the other day as well, too. Thank you for your donations. That's what makes this show possible three times a week during the season and twice during the off season there. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. The donate button's over there to the right. We'll take you right to PayPal. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. David, great show today. We'll wrap this thing up in a bow on Friday, along with our predictions for the other games.
Yeah, it's going to be fun on Friday. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.